Well, Brigham, I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from the New American Magazine, a senior editor, Bill Jasper. Are you still the senior editor there, Bill?
I am.
All right, fine.
Nobody older than me, I guess.
And Bill's been at this for a long time, almost as long as I have. And he, of course, writes some wonderful, wonderful articles. If you don't read the New American, and read Bill Jasper's articles, while you're really missing something. But we're going to be talking about some of the problems that we face in America today. As the America that we were brought up in, the America that we have always loved, is gradually changing, a little bit by little bit. So gradually, most people don't notice what's going on until they begin looking back, and then they suddenly realize that things are not the way they were before. So, with that as a background, Bill, you pick up the story.
Well, Stan, the big issue right now that is on the front burner for a lot of people and for our country is the whole issue of whether or not we're going to continue as a country, whether we're going to continue as the United States of America, or whether we're going to become Mexifornia and then Mexamerica, or Canamexamerica, under the new plan that was just, they had a meeting, President Bush and his Canadian and Mexican counterparts down in Cancun a couple of weeks ago, at the same time that we were having all the marchers in the streets here. And what they were discussing down there in Cancun was the merging of Mexico, Canada, and the United States. It's a plan that President Bush calls the Security and Prosperity Partnership of the Americas. It's also called the North American Community, a plan for merging the economic, political, social systems of all three countries. And of course, that is happening de facto with the enormous migration, not immigration as it's frequently called, but just illegal migration across our borders by millions of people from all over the world coming through Mexico, and as well as through all of our ports of entry. And that's what all of the demonstrations of the past several weeks have been centered on. Demonstrations by militant illegal aliens who have come here illegally, jumped the border ahead of millions of people who are waiting in line, who have been applying to come to this country through the legal channels. And now the silent majority of Americans have started speaking up and saying we're going to be silent no more. And all of the politicians in Washington that were jumping on the illegal alien bandwagon have now been backpedaling and getting second thoughts. And that's what we're trying to do right now, is get more Americans to realize that if we are going to have a voice in our own government, then we better exercise it right now.
And, of course, we are going to lose our sovereignty. If there's not certainly 12 or 11 or 12 million illegal aliens. The number by the government's own secret figures is 20 million. These are the figures that were given to representatives of our banks here a couple of months ago, when they were got together by the Federal Reserve System and told just to help the illegal aliens be able to get money back to Mexico to feed their families. 20 million, and when they become citizens, of course, then they'll be able to bring their families. We'll have 100 million people flooding into America, and the America we have known will cease to exist. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, Bill Jasper from the New American. Pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, you just mentioned, you know, that we'd be having maybe 100 million come to this country. Now, some people might think that that's outlandish, that that's a huge exaggeration. It is not. It is not. And you remember very well, as I do, 20 years ago, when we had this supposedly once-and-for-all immigration amnesty that was known as IRCA, the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. I wrote about this repeatedly in the New American Magazine. At that time, by 1986, I had already been down on the border for 10 years in Southern California, had been going down on the border regularly with the Border Patrol, with Customs, many times just by myself or with a camera crew, and had been reporting that our borders were being overrun, that we were in danger of actually our borders. We had lost control of them, but you can actually lose them altogether once you have a enclave or a series of enclaves along your border which are no longer American citizens or people who consider themselves American citizens, but border jumpers and squatters who then think they are entitled to remain there, and once they have large enough numbers can enforce those claims. And that's what we are seeing right now. Back by that time in 1986, when I put together a video documentary for the John Birch Society called Out of Control, the Immigration Invasion. And back then we interviewed Border Patrol, active and retired Border Patrol members, sheriffs. I interviewed Sheriff Gary Painter of Midland, Texas, and they had actually had intelligence coming back across the border at that time of terrorist training in camps in Mexico. And we showed on our video a whole series of Syrian terrorists who had been captured at the Mexican border, even with their photos of them with their Kalashnikovs. And so this was happening clear back then in the mid-80s. And when I did a nationwide tour at that time, was on a lot of radio and TV, and we showed the video on a lot of TV in the eastern states and the Midwest, and people just couldn't believe that was happening until they saw it. And but they still thought, well, that's a problem for California or maybe Texas or Arizona. Well, now it's a national problem, as we saw on April 10th, as we saw on March 25th and March 27th. It wasn't just in...
Well, that's all right there, Bill. We're just going to bring our other stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Jasper. And actually, he had, back many years ago, had actually put together a video that really showed pictures of Syrian terrorists trained in Mexico with their automatic weapons being caught at the border. He went all over the country. What was this, almost 20 years ago?
Over 20 years
over
ago.
Over 20
the,
years
the,
ago.
The video was produced 20 years ago, but much of it was film that I'd been shooting over a period of about 3 years, and then other still shots and audio recordings that I'd taken even prior to that. And it was very clear to me at that time. I had gotten particularly interested in that because I was, prior to that, was actually doing undercover work amongst terrorist support groups in Southern California, which included the Sandinistas, the FSLN from Nicaragua, the Farabundo Marti, or FMLN, from El Salvador, the FALN from Puerto Rico, the Weather Underground, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And it was very clear that they were intersecting with and allied with the National Lawyers Guild and many of these different immigrant rights groups that were posing as good Samaritans trying to help poor immigrants. But what they were actually doing was providing legal assistance to subversives and actual terrorists and terrorist support personnel that were coming to this country. And I was at places in Southern California, in Los Angeles County, where hundreds of Sandinista young men who had just been through boot camp and the Sandinistas were there in the Los Angeles area, and began to see how they were actually using the same networks of the illegal aliens that were coming in for day labor and whatnot, an agricultural worker and seasonal labor, agricultural labor jobs. The Sandinistas and the FMLN and others were coming in as well. And that has continued over the years.
But, of course, these are all communist organizations, or communist-affiliated organizations that are really working with the immigration movement of today. But what most people don't understand is this is being funded by organizations like the Ford Foundation and organizations like our own government that's giving money to LULAC, which is an immigrant, an organization for illegal aliens. What sort of madness is this that our government is funding the very revolutionary movement that threatens to overthrow our government? Or is it all a scam?
Well, I'm sure you've had programs on, Stan, because we've talked about this over the years, about the Ford Foundation and Rockefeller Foundation. Back in the 1950s, there were several studies or investigations by congressional investigative committees into the revolutionary and subversive activities of these big foundations, which, you know, Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and then Carnegie Endowment, and now the MacArthur Foundation and Hewlett-Packard, etc. These were great American fortunes that were, some of the wealthiest Americans, and yet they were funding some of the most revolutionary communist organizations in this country. And so they were investigated by a number of congressional committees, but always before they could really expose the funding by these foundations thoroughly, before it could be thoroughly exposed and get into the press, there were always huge efforts to quash the investigation.
Like Congressman Cox died, and the people on the Reese Committee
right?
died. And of course, eventually they forced the Reese Committee to disband, I think in 1954. But at least we have their committee report, and we know what they found about how the great tax-exempt foundations were funding the subversive organizations supposedly intent upon overthrowing the great fortunes of our country. So obviously these people, these revolutionaries, are being used, and most of them don't even realize it, do they?
Right. I think that most of them don't. Most of them are probably really think they are working toward the Marxist goals, or in the cases of those that aren't openly Marxist, toward the supposedly humanitarian goals that they think they're working for. However, it goes on up to today. If you go right now to, for instance, on April 10th, when we had the big demonstrations in Washington, D.C., Chicago, L.A., all over the country, in 75 cities or so around the country. We're told that these were just spontaneous grassroots events that the people just came out and organized. Not true. Huge amounts of money went into organizing those. You had the actual April10.org site. If you go to it, you'll see that it was sponsored by two organizations, the CCC, which was the Center for Community Change, and FIRM, which is the Foundation for Immigration Reform Movement. Both of those organizations, if you go on their websites, you'll see, look at their funding, they're both funded by the Ford Foundation. They get millions of dollars from the Ford Foundation. Ford Foundation pays for them to have professional organizers and revolutionaries to go around and agitate for these kinds of things. And then you see that they sponsor dozens of other organizations. So it gives the appearance of popular support, and as if there's this massive upswelling of the people coming together, when what you really see is a paper facade of all of these different organizations that have been organized by these very wealthy elites to stir up all of the people that are here after having suppressed our border control for decades.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners then to understand what the rationale would be, for the elite, the Ford Foundation, these other very wealthy organizations, funding the communist revolutionaries, and having these mass demonstrations. It is said that 500,000 people were out demonstrating for the immigrants. Now, it wasn't immigrants. It was illegal immigration, but they never used that word because in the media, they never mentioned them as illegal immigrants or illegal aliens. It's always immigrants, and we're a nation of immigrants. But why do they want the demonstrations? Why are they trying to get this pressure from below? Aren't they trying to get legislation passed that will allow this to happen so that they can actually change our culture, change our language,
and bring
about this global government that they believe in?
Well, right, and I mentioned at the start that one of the key things there is eventual merger of the United States. Most Americans realize now, most Americans understand that our borders are broken, that our immigration system is dysfunctional. I mean, even Time and Newsweek and CNN and CBS and ABC have had many stories now admitting over the last couple of years, our borders are really in terrible shape. We're being overrun. And they finally get it. On that score, they'll admit that there is a problem now, because you can't ignore it, particularly when the millions who they were saying for years weren't here are now here and are now demanding rights according to whatever their whims are. So what they want to do now is to say, well, we really can't do anything about the borders. We have to reach out and expand our borders. No longer is it going to be our northern border with Mexico or with Canada and our southern border with Mexico. We're going to embrace a common border, the North American community. Now, we need to do this, they say, both for security, because our borders are broken now, so we'll have to expand them. And we'll take it in and we'll cooperate with Mexico and with Canada, and we'll be more secure that way. And we'll be able to facilitate trade then, because right now we're having to stop and people have to line up, in their trucks for miles now to bring all of the trade into the United States. And wouldn't it be much better to have a free flow of commerce and people between our three countries? Well, that is what is the blueprint put forward for the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership, that President Bush has signed on to. He has been promoting that for the last year and a half now, and a couple months after they launched it in March of last year, the administration announced that they already had 300 different initiatives going to bring about this merger between our three countries. And oddly enough, but not so odd if you've been following these things for a long time, we find out that in June of last year, just a couple months after the Bush administration launched this, the Congress had testimony from the Council on Foreign Relations. Specifically from Robert Pastor, the co-chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force on North America. And Dr. Pastor, professor at Emory University and American University, is a longtime hardcore Marxist activist from the Carter administration and from the Institute for Policy Studies. He's been a notorious left-winger for years, and he is now one of the co-chairmen of the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force. They're the ones that actually put together this plan for this North American community and really presented it to the Bush administration and for the Bush administration. So we see that the Bush administration is continuing what the Clinton administration and the Bush administration before it and so on had done in terms of outsourcing U.S. policy and U.S. Administration to the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, the next big step, and Dr. Pastor has testified about that, is transferring tens of billions of dollars for infrastructure development in Mexico so that we can continue this merger.
In other words, we're going to begin to build up Mexico to raise their living standards. And what people don't understand, this is just what they did in Europe. They started out talking about trade, and then, of course, they were going to begin to merge their money, and then they were going to have a common parliament, and it's all part of a move towards world government. And our leaders are lying to us. They have no loyalty to America. They don't believe in American sovereignty. They believe in a one world government and a new world religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Jasper, talking about this effort to build a North American community. There's actually a book by that title. Council on Foreign Relations is sending me one, and you can get it to the Brookings Institute. And they lay this whole plan out, exactly what they're planning to do. Now, Bill, why doesn't the average individual really understand what this is about? I mean, they see the illegal aliens or the illegal immigrants demonstrating, but they can't connect the dots. They can't see that how they are being used, the illegal immigrants are being used, simply as a vehicle of gradually, taking away our national sovereignty and raising our living standards to that of the poor American peasant. The poor Mexican peasant.
Well, yeah. Well, it's becoming the American peasant. The American middle class is doomed if this continues. We've seen a huge slippage over the last couple of decades in the American middle class, and really that is what has been the guarantor of our freedoms over all of these past couple of centuries, where you have not just one elite ruling class and the rest a peasantry kept in servitude by regulation and government taxation. But the middle class that has allowed America to have the prosperity and the freedom that we enjoy is in terrible danger, and we cannot absorb, as you pointed out, tens or hundreds of millions more. The Pew Hispanic Center did a survey last summer in Mexico. And they surveyed a large number of Mexicans, and they found that 46% of Mexicans wanted to come to the United States and intended to come to the United States. Now, Mexico is the 12th largest nation in the world by population, 107 million people. 46% of that is nearly, is around 50 million people. Now, for those who advocate open borders, and I've been on some radio shows with some. I was just on one yesterday with a libertarian radio talk show host out of the Chicago area, and he says, "Well, I don't have any problem with that. If people want to come here, let them come here and work. They'll do work that Americans won't do." No, all of the work that the illegal aliens are doing was done by Americans and would be done by Americans, and in states that don't have large illegal alien populations, are still done by Americans. But Americans can't and won't do it at coolie wages or peasant wages that illegal aliens will do it for. If they'll come in here from Mexico, and not just Mexico, but I said 107 million in Mexico. If you look at all of Latin America and the Caribbean, it's 530 million. And the same percentage probably holds true for them, in some cases even more. Probably 80 or 90% of the people there would want to come to the United States. So the people that are actual open borders advocates have to face up to a hard fact, and we have to confront them with it. Okay, if you just say open the borders, as the Wall Street Journal advocates. In fact, the Wall Street Journal is on the side of the fence of the international globalists. They've taken an editorial position that we should amend the Constitution to say we will have open borders.
Because
now that means that
hold
means
that, hold
we
that
have
thought.
To be willing to take
hold
hundreds.
That, hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Jasper, and talking about this open border policy, which will allow literally, 100 million or more people to come. Bill was simply pointing out that they had gone into Mexico, they'd interviewed the people. Some 47% or 46% wanted to come to the United States. But in a nation of 107 million, this is about 50 million people in Mexico want to come to the United States. Remember, we probably already have pretty close already to 20 million people here. The government of figures is 12, but that's not what they say behind the scenes, certainly. Now, there's a great deal of evidence that the figure is really closer to 20, but we don't want to concern the average American people. We want them just to go along blithely while they betray our sovereignty, because our leaders have no loyalty to America. They swear to uphold the Constitution. They refuse to enforce our immigration laws. They know exactly what they're doing. They refuse to guard our borders. They refuse to arrest the employers who are employing illegal aliens and enforce the laws that are on the books. They're very selective in which laws they enforce. And, of course, they really do not want to stop the immigration, which is why they absolutely refuse to support the immigration laws. Somebody pointed out that recently they did arrest the owners of a small Chinese restaurant that employed a couple of illegal illegal aliens. But the big employers, they're not going to go after them because our leaders have a different loyalty. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, I'd like to just back up to a point that you made there about the true numbers here. We should recall that back in 1986, when the IRCA amnesty went through, that the advocates of amnesty then said, well, there's 1 million illegal aliens here that will apply for amnesty. 3 million, over 3 million applied. If we apply that same rule of thumb today, then it would say there's not 10 or 11 or 12 million here, but more in the line of 30 million. Well, I don't know if it's that high, but certainly probably closer as the number of more reasonable estimates have said it, closer to 20 million. Now, that's a huge, huge fifth column within our own country. It's worth remembering that it was in the late 370s A.D. when Imperial Rome fell to immigration. In 377, the Romans under Emperor Valens allowed the Goths to come in to Rome. At that time, the Huns were ravaging, thundering out of the east, and the Visigoths and the Ostrogoths were defeated by them, and they went running en masse westward. And when they got to the Danube River, they were stopped there by the Roman garrisons. And pretty soon there were as many as 1.5 million or 2 million Goths there wanting to get in. And they finally agreed to terms with Emperor Valens that they would come in under strict servitude to Rome. They were allowed in, and as Ammianus Marcellinus, the historian, said, they came in, quote, like lava from Etna across the Danube River, and they were allowed to set up their encampments in Thrace. Unfortunately, the Roman commanders there were very vicious and cruel, and they exploited the Goths and took advantage of them. They had disarmed them and virtually starved them and took all of their possessions, even forced them to give up their wives and children in exchange for food. And finally, the desperate Goths rebelled, and they overwhelmed their Roman captors. And in 377, they took off ravaging all of Thrace and defeated all of the armies that were sent against them until Emperor Valens himself led an enormous Roman army north to engage them. And then took place the great historic battle at Hadrianople. And the Romans were utterly defeated. Roman supremacy on the battlefield for the 700 years was put to an end. The Roman army was destroyed. 2/3 of its soldiers were slain. Emperor Valens disappeared, never to be found. It was the greatest disaster to befall Roman army since the days of Hannibal. And the Goths were in the Roman Empire to stay. And a few years later, when they had learned the rudiments of siege warfare, they took Rome itself. Now, that is a lesson that has been told throughout throughout history, and it's very pertinent to us today.
But of course, we don't teach history in our schools today. In fact, a lot of our young people don't even know who's buried in Grant's tomb. And it reflects in if you don't understand history, why you're condemned to repeat it. Of course, Santayana said, if you don't remember, well, our students have never been taught history, and it's about time, that we begin to understand that America is under siege today. America's been invaded, but it's not simply with the people who really want a better life from south of the border. It's the people at the highest echelons of our government with an intense hatred for America and everything it stands for, who worship a different God, who have a different goal in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Jasper, the senior editor of the New American Magazine. And if you don't read his editorials, why, you're missing a great deal. He doesn't write the editorials usually. He simply writes the articles, but they ought to be editorials. They're very good, very much to the point, and he has a tremendous grasp of history and understanding of what's going on, and he's been on the front lines of this battle for many years. Well, Bill, what then can we do faced with the problems that you're describing? And I agree with everything you've said. America is being invaded. It has been invaded. We're being betrayed by our leaders. Our attention is focused on what's going on in Iraq, which is a wonderful diversion. And as young men, American boys, go overseas to fight for freedom in Iraq, while we're losing our freedom here at home.
Well, Stan, there's many facets of this to cover, but some people may become discouraged or even depressed, thinking that it's hopeless, and it is not. So I'd like to hit on some of the things that are very hopeful before we get on to some of the nitty-gritty of some of the other problems that we face regarding the migration, immigration, merging of our countries, and whatnot. And first of all, on the encouraging level, I'd like to invite all of your listeners to come to our website, either the New American magazine, which is thenewamerican.com, that's three words, thenewamerican.com, and they'll see right off the bat we have quite a few immigration stories up there, and a link that will take you then right to jbs.org, that's JBS as in John Birch Society.org. And that is our number one issue right now, because that is the one that's really going to be decided one way or the other in the very near future, in a matter of days, weeks, or months. The encouraging thing here is that, particularly in the last few weeks, the American giant has really been awakened, and I know that because I talk with many of the staffers in Washington, D.C., and their Washington offices, as well as their local offices, have been getting swamped with calls from angry constituents, calls and emails and letters and faxes and visits. And that is very encouraging indeed. In fact, it began really in reaction to all of these massive demonstrations that we began seeing at the end of March and the beginning of April. And you may recall that on April Fool's Week, I mean, I kept thinking...
Hold that thought for just a moment as we're going to bring our other stations back on board right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Jasper, the senior editor of New American Magazine. Before I go on, Bill, is there a telephone number? Is there any way that you mentioned earlier your website, but please give it out so our listeners out all across America will know how to get to your website, and if there's a telephone number for more additional information.
Right. That's www.thenewamerican.com or jbs.org. There is an 800 number, that's 1-800-727-TRUE, T-R-U-E, 800-727-TRUE. And once you go to our, for those who are connected to the Internet, once you go to our website, you can actually, in just a few clicks, send an email to your congressman and your senators with in just a matter of a couple of minutes. So there's not a lot of effort involved in this. It's something that's worth a lot of effort when you're talking about saving our citizenship and our country and whatnot. So if you don't know who your representative and your senator, your two senators are, that's no problem. You'll go there, click on the link that says Contact Congress, and it'll take you to another page, and it'll say put in your zip code, and you put in your zip code, and it'll pop up your senators, the president, and your representative. And then it will give you the information if you want to write a letter, if you want to call, if you want to fax, or you can just click on the email link. It'll bring up an email box. You can do that for each one of them. And just compose a short letter. Say, I am angry over this whole idea of granting amnesty or guest worker status to any of the illegal aliens. We do not need to continue tearing down our borders. We need to build up our borders and enforce our borders, and we demand that you do this. It's one of the constitutional functions of government. And then send that off to them. And in just a short time, you can have registered your voice. And that is what has already caused many of these congressmen, many of these senators who just a few weeks ago were linking arms with the illegal aliens, now many of them have backed off.
And I think, really, as Everett Dirksen said, Senator Everett Dirksen, you know, you don't see the light until you feel the heat.
That's right.
If they know that they are going to be in real trouble, the congressmen are all up for election in November of this year. And if they know that you're going to tell everybody they're a traitor to our country, they've betrayed us, they're going to modify their vote. Because the one thing about congressmen, most of them aren't dedicated to the right or to the left. They're just dedicated to staying in Washington, D.C. and getting all the perks. And certainly a third of our senators are up for re-election. And if they know how strongly you feel, they may rethink their position. Maybe they are globalists. Maybe they hate America and hate our sovereignty, but they want to stay in Washington, D.C.
And that's very, very important to remember. We can't get discouraged over this. We have to hang on to this. And the other encouraging thing is that a whole series of polls, as I've just written a story on this recently, a whole series of polls by Gallup, by NBC, by Pew Research, by a whole number of Zogby, it's NBC, have pointed out that by huge majorities in the 80s, and the IQ research poll, this one showed that 92% of Americans believe that protecting our borders, gaining control of our borders, is the number one priority of the federal government. Well, the politicians are beginning to hear that. And I should point out, this is not a partisan issue. We have bipartisan treachery and treason here in operation. Republicans and Democrats both. At the presidential level, President Bush has been, Bill King, who is a Republican, who is the Border Patrol chief, and he voted for President Bush in the first election. He says, I would never vote for him again. He said he's been the worst president on immigration, even worse than Bill Clinton. And many of the in the Senate and in the House, Republicans and Democrats have both been atrocious in regard to our borders. When you look back in 1986, 20 years ago, there's quite a few members of Congress. I asked one of our research gals to put together a table on all of those in the House and the Senate that were in office and that voted for the 1986 amnesty. And it's quite a list of both Democrats and Republicans. We have people like John McCain, of course, and Ted Kennedy, and that's a Republican and Democrat, Joseph Biden and Larry Craig of Idaho, Richard Lugar, Republican of Indiana, Mitch McConnell, Republican of Texas, Olympia Snowe, Republican of Maine, Barbara Mikulski, Democrat from Maryland, Paul Sarbanes, Democrat from Maryland, John Kerry, Democrat from Massachusetts. You know, so we have very liberal Democrats and globalist Republicans, and the same in the House. And this is not a matter of being a Republican or a Democrat. We should all be Americans first and hold our politicians accountable based upon their oath of office and based upon the Constitution. And so when it comes to matters like this, we shouldn't allow the politicians to play the party card and get us marching in blind loyalty to them because we have to support the party. You know, we should all be Americans first, and this is a vital issue that affects all of us as Americans. So the encouraging thing is we do have the vast majority of the American people on our side. We have right on our side. And now we just have to make sure that we activate enough people to let their voices be heard so that they don't just get frustrated and say, well, they're all a bunch of bums, we can't do anything about it.
And I really think that's absolutely true. We have to be involved. If we're not involved, believe me, the other side is going to be involved. And, you know, this is the most incredible thing. You know, lots of times they say, you know, we've got to have everybody fingerprinted. We've got to have these cameras up every place. We've got to have iris scans. Why? We've got to be able to identify people to make sure they're not either one, terrorists, or illegal aliens. So they leave the borders open. They encourage the immigration on one hand, and on the other hand, of course, then they say, we've got to take away the freedom from the American people to control illegal immigration. In a similar manner, oh my goodness, we've got to do something about the terrorists. Well, actually, the terrorists can walk right across our southern border if they want to, and I'm sure that tens of thousands have already come. People from Muslim, people from terrorist nations, the nations support terrorism, have come into this country. When they come in, the first thing the Border Patrol does is give them a date for a hearing and tell them to come back, and you'd never guess what? None of them ever come back for their hearing.
So, right, and you know, a couple of months ago, Michael Chertoff, head of Homeland Security, made a big statement. You know, typical politicians, just like Clinton, just like Bush, they know, they hear, they put a finger to the wind and they say, ooh, ooh, the natives are restless out there, we better put on a show for them. So he came out, did a big press conference. No more catch and release. From this point forward, no more catch and release. Well, that was referring to what you had just talked about, that here they get all these illegal aliens here and they say, okay, and some of them they put right back across the border if they're voluntary returns. But if the illegal alien says, no, I'm going to contest that, then they give them a deportation court hearing. Well, the courts are all booked, so they don't have enough beds or prisons or camps to put them in. So they just say, okay, well, come back 3 weeks from now to court. You're released. And guess what? 90% of them don't come back. And so Michael Chertoff made a big public statement. Oh, no more catch and release. Well, he didn't really mean it. And in fact, I was watching on C-SPAN just last week when the House Immigration and House Security Committee was holding its hearings, and they had the head of the acting head of immigration there, and he said, "Now, what is this with catch and release? Have you ended catch and release?" And they said, well, no, that's probably in another year or two we'll have control of that. So, I mean, it was all a big show. They haven't ended catch and release. When they talk about securing the borders, Michael Chertoff himself testified before the same committee a couple of months ago. And he said, well, yes, we hope to gain control over our borders within 3 years. Oh my God, within 3 years we could have another 15 or 20 million aliens coming across the border. And if he's not willing to get in, if the administration is not willing to get control of the border now, they don't ever intend to do it. And that is very clear by their budgeting and their manpower commitments, or lack thereof, to the border, to the Border Patrol. Most Americans don't realize that covering our whole southern border and our whole northern border and all of the other areas that the Border Patrol has to cover, we have only right now around 11,000 Border Patrol agents. New York Police Department has about 40,000 police officers. But the Border Patrol made over 1.2 million apprehensions last year. They have far more arrests than any police agency, and yet they're smaller than many of the police agencies. You look at many of the other government departments, Department of Health and Human Services, which isn't even a constitutionally authorized agency. It has 61,000 bureaucrats. The U.S. Department of Labor has 71,000 bureaucrats. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has 102,000 bureaucrats. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has 18,000 bureaucrats. And here the Border Patrol, which is supposed to be taking care of one of our most vital functions of protecting our nation, has only 11,000, I think it's 11,300.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting, Bill. We have probably 50,000 troops stationed in Europe. We've had them stationed there for 60 years.
Yeah.
Why couldn't we bring them home and have a guarded border? We have about the same number stationed in Japan for 60 years since the end of the Second World War. Why can't we bring them home and have a guard our borders? We've got 40 or 50,000 troops stationed in South Korea. You know, and they've been there for about, well, let's see, war ended in 51, 52, so they've been there
over
50 years. Why can't we bring them home? And the truth of the matter is, as you and I both know, they have no intention of trying to guard our borders. I think it's the hardest thing for the average American to realize that we have people at the highest levels of our government who will get up before a committee or before the American people or the television cameras and live and try to give the feeling or the impression that they really want to do something. But the problem is they have a different loyalty. Their loyalty is not to America. Would that be a fair statement?
It's very fair. Their loyalty is not to America. When you're trying to promote something like this, the SPP to merge our three countries, and when you even mention that it is to be more like the European Union, that is an admission of betrayal. Our Constitution does not give any of our government leaders, the President, the Congress, anybody, the ability to merge our countries with any others, to destroy our borders, to synchronize our policies with some international norms. And that's what they're doing. They're piecemeal dismantling our constitutional system. And that is a very dangerous thing. And in fact, it's far more dangerous when you have people who have taken oaths of office and who hold the highest offices in our lands in the legislative, executive, and judicial branch who are disloyal to this country. That's far more dangerous than the revolutionaries in the streets or all of the peasants and illegal aliens that are coming across. All of them present problems, but when you have betrayal at the top, and there's no way to sugarcoat it anyway, it really is. When people take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution, they're saying, well, we hold this trust sacred. I'm going to abide by the Constitution. Well, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 4, gives the federal government power and control over our rules of naturalization and over our borders. They are not doing that. They won't even commit. We just have 11,000 people. They're being overrun on the Border Patrol there. And yet, in just the agencies that I mentioned there, the four that I mentioned, they have 260,000 bureaucrats, and they're making these ridiculous claims that, well, we just can't squeeze out any money. Our budget for this coming year is $2.8 trillion. And they're saying, oh, no, we can't find a few hundred million to do this. You know, like you said, they're counting on us to remain stupid and to keep believing them when they say they really are intending to control our borders.
And, you know, that old adage, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me a dozen times, why I must be a fool not to realize that you're lying to me.
Yeah.
And when we hear these people talking about how strengthening our country, and then they're doing everything they can to outsource our jobs and to outsource our factories, and when the president tells us how much better we are now that we're outsourcing jobs to India, and the American people sit back and say, is that really true? Well, let me tell you that we're seeing, if you look and see what's happening to the average wage of the working men in America, it's going down as far as their purchasing power is concerned. There is an organized, intentional effort to impoverish the American people, to destroy the value of their savings. When are the American people going to say, we're not going to put up with this any longer?
Well, I think we're there, and we just have to make sure they are. I was just talking with my neighbor just before I came back into here, and he's quite angry about this. And he said, look, they don't have to talk about any of these other things, amnesty or guest worker or whatnot. It's very simple. You control the borders, and we don't do anything else or consider any of these other things until we actually control the borders. And that's exactly it. We have to get the message through to the would-be rulers there on the Potomac that, look, we're not going to be put off by any of this fast-talking, slick-talking, shuffle again. You've had your chance. You promised many times before. We're not going to talk about amnesty, guest worker, earned legalization, earned citizenship, or any of these other euphemisms for amnesty. We're not going to even talk about or consider any of those other things until after the border has been secured and we've had a year or two to look and see if it's working. Then we'll talk about what we're going to do about the illegal aliens and everybody here. But we have to first staunch the border there. It's just like with if you're bleeding, you got an artery cut, you better stop it before you start worrying about your headache or other things.
Now, how do you feel about this? A bill that passed the House of Representatives wants to build a fence along 700 miles of the 2,000-mile border. I'm not quite certain how building a fence along 700 miles of a 2,000-mile border is going to make much difference.
Well, right. H.R. 4437... it has been pictured as this draconian measure that all of the activists are so upset about that it's going to have these terrible, terrible repercussions. It's going to stop even legal immigration. No, it's just barely a start. It is really pretty meek and mild and, in my opinion, deficient, but at least it's a start.
And, of course, that was the House bill, but the Senate bill really wanted to just grant amnesty to just about everybody. Well, anybody been here 5 years automatically. If you've broken our laws for 5 years, now we're going to reward you by allowing you to stay permanently. Ladies and gentlemen, we're being betrayed, and it's about time you understood and that you got involved if you love America. Well, Bill, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, this is a big topic. It's been brewing for many years. Stan, as you know, we've had many articles in the New American Magazine on this. Did a whole documentary, an hour-long documentary on it 20 years ago, trying to tell the American people about it. I've done a number of speaking tours around the country over the last 20 years. We can't cover it all in one night, but people will go to our website. That's jbs.org. Or thenewamerican.com, or call our 800 number. That's 800-727-TRUE. You can get information on this, and you can actually you'll have access to many different articles and links to other organizations and articles on covering all aspects of the immigration. And you can find out specifically about the bills that are involved, the Kennedy-McCain, the H.R. 4437, the latest version of the Senate bill, and how you can contact your congressman, your senators, your representative, the president. And that's what it's going to take. People have to really say, gee, this is worth it, spending a little time. I'm going to besiege my misrepresentatives there in Washington and make them get in line. And then we're going to sweep from office all of those people who are responsible. We still have about 80 members of Congress who voted for that amnesty 20 years ago that should get a reckoning this year. And all of those that voted wrongly over these last few weeks. So now's the time to take advantage of the opportunity we have.
And, of course, don't forget how they voted on CAFTA, which is part of this whole move. It is all an effort to destroy
CAFTA, our country. CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, are part and parcel of, they were the preludes to this Security and Prosperity Partnership, the SPP that we talked about that was launched in Waco, Texas last year by Mexico, Canada, and the United States.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. I hope we can get you back on to our other programs. I think your message is so vitally important. And this is really a turning point for America. If we bring in and legalize these 20 million people, remember they're lying to us about the 11 or 12 million. Wouldn't you expect that they would lie to us? Don't they always lie to us? I mean, when was the last time you heard a politician really tell you the truth? So, you know, if they're saying there's only 10 or 12 million, don't you believe it for one minute. And if we don't stop this, then America, as we've known, will simply become a remembrance of things past. Bill Jasper, senior editor of the New American Magazine, good night. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Stan. Always a pleasure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is a vitally important issue, and we hope that many of you will join us in this effort to get the information out. We have a great four-tape set on immigration, interviews with Glenn Spencer and Chris Simcox and I think Jim Gilchrist and Barbara Cole. We have certainly a book written by a congressional assistant called Importing immigration, and it deals with how the Ford Foundation has been funding this subversive activity. You must understand this is all funded by people of great wealth. And when you understand that socialism is stripped of all of its idealism, all of its, you know, beautiful ideas about helping mankind, is really centralize all power in government and establish a new ruling class. The Mexico had their socialist revolution back in 1930. And you have more billionaires in Mexico than you have in all the rest of South America put together. More billionaires in Mexico than all the rest of South America put together. Why? This is socialism. They have a ruling elite, and then they have everybody else enslaved. That's what socialism is really all about. When you get away from all the idealism, this is applied socialism. And that's exactly what they always have intended, but they can't let you know what they really intend. So we carry a wonderful book. It's called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It was written by the Council for the Rees Committee that in 1993 was commissioned to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations and find out what they were doing. And as it said in the foreword to the book written by Congressman B. Carroll Rees, the purpose of our investigation was to find out what part the great foundations played in pushing a Marxist philosophy and trying to destroy the love which every American should have for our way of life. And that's exactly what they found. The great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, were all, of course, in financing subversive activity, taking over the control of our textbooks and our universities and our educational system. The real goal was a one-world government with a new ruling elite. But behind that, of course, are powerful spiritual forces. That's why you need to read my book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. So again, that we have a four-tape set on immigration. We have the book Importing Immigration. We have the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and then my book entitled Brotherhood of Darkness. We have, of course, the video and DVD by that title. We also have, I think, a very, very important talk. It's called World Revolution. There you'll see my interview with him. Ambassador Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time, we turned Cuba over to a known communist. And he will tell you, we knew Fidel Castro was a communist, the State Department knew he was, and we brought him to power. So it's a fascinating overview, and of course it goes into the background of the continuing world revolution that began with the American Revolution in 1776 and continues to this very day. And contrary to everything you've been led to believe, this has nothing to do with socialism. It has nothing to do with humanism or the Enlightenment. It has to do with the occult. And we simply go into the writings of James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress. If you've not read his book, you need to get it. We carry it. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from the Arc Institute up there in Oregon, Jerry Quadetti. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Stan. How about yourself?
No complaints at all. These are exciting times we live in. And, you know, there's really a tremendous uncertainty, I think, on the parts of many people. We hear about the possibility of a war with Iran, or at least an attack on Iran. Of course, a lot of people think we can go ahead and simply attack a country, but there wouldn't be any reprisals on America. Oh, that would be terrible if they were to make reprisals on America just because we killed 10 or 20,000 of their people. Certainly, we know the Muslims never want an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. Well, then, of course, there's so many other things going on, but one of the things I think that people really are relatively not even thinking about is the fact that genetically modified foods are poisoning our population. People say, why, that couldn't be true. The FDA wouldn't allow that. And I would like to suggest there are people in the FDA or some of the finest scientists that money could buy. They have another agenda, too. So why don't you sort of pick up, and I know that you have been very, very involved in this. In fact, you worked in genetic engineering for years, didn't you?
Right, I certainly did, Stan. I worked in genetic engineering in several different areas, but one of them was on soybean crops, soybean cultures, and the nitrogen fixation in soybean roots and so on. So, yes, I have dealt with this firsthand. It's a very powerful science. As a matter of fact, the term is often used. It's a very sexy science in that it is very exciting. It is very titillating. It's very intellectually satisfying for folks because it is so very powerful. But therein lies the problem. It's exceedingly powerful. We can literally take genes across species and transplant them from one species to another and so on. And sometimes our goals are very noble. We want to bring, for example, vitamin A into crops in areas in Africa that will perhaps reduce blindness, or in India to reduce blindness and so on. And we may start out with noble goals. However, as you know, over especially the past 20, 30 years, greed certainly has worked its way into the formula. And unfortunately, when the industry, and I'm not talking about everyone, but certainly in every industry, there are bad apples, but when the industry saw the economic good that it could do for their bottom line, to have monopolies on certain food products, even whole species of plants, like owning soybeans across the globe by putting one of your own genes in it and saying, now, this is a novel gene, it's in soybean, we own the whole genome, the whole genetic makeup of soybeans, now we own God-given soybeans. Well, you can see what that, of course, does. Anybody who grows a soybean has to pay a royalty for growing a soybean. So the thing got out of control, continues to be out of control. And now we have some evidence that just broke today, so maybe after your break, I'll give you the evidence that just broke today that what you and I have been talking about for a couple of years has now come to pass.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Jerry Quadetti of the Arc Institute. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jerry Quadetti. What's the big news, Jerry?
Well, just today, April 18th, Tuesday, April 18th, the EU Commission admitted GM food uncertainty. That's the European Commission, who has been approving genetically modified crops for human consumption, actually secretly warned about their impact on health and the environment. A report published today revealed. These are papers obtained by two environmental groups, including Greenpeace and one of those groups, that has been published on the Internet. I have accessed that today. It was 369 pages long, that report. I'm only through about a third of it, scanning through it. But what I've gleaned so far from this very frank study was that there were, and I'll quote, large areas of uncertainty, and another quote, some issues have not been studied at all with respect to GM food safety. And yet, they pushed the release at the behest of the United States, New Zealand, Canada, and Argentina. They pushed the release of GM foods in Europe, and there are GM foods that have been released since 2004. There was a Europe-wide ban on GM foods in member states between 1998 and 2004, but U.S. and Canada and Argentina now produce about 90% of the world's GM crops, and they pushed very hard. They appealed to the World Trade Organization, and they said that this was against world trade laws for them to do so. And so the 340-page, that is a brief form without the bibliography, the 340-page document reveals that in support of its stance, the Commission told the World Trade Organization that, quote, it is apparent from the scientific advice that there is no unique, absolute, scientific cutoff threshold available to decide whether a GM product is safe or not.
Well, because, I mean, the thing is, Jerry, that if there's any question, they should not release it. I mean, could you imagine people say, well, I don't know if this gun's going to explode, you know, when you use it, but it may not, so go ahead and use it. Or would you tell your children, well, drive the car, we don't know where the brakes are going to work, but, you know, go ahead and drive it anyway, and then if we find down the line they don't work, why, of course, we'll get them fixed. This is madness, unless there's another agenda.
Another quote from that paper says that there is simply no way of ascertaining whether the introduction of GM products has had any effect on human health.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry Guidetti has been talking about the report that was released by the European Union. It was gotten by a couple of environmentalists. It's some 300 pages long, and this special European Union committee said that these products have not been adequately studied. There is no way to know whether they're harmful or not. There is some evidence they may or may not be, but certainly, you know, what they're doing is really going to use the people of the United States and of Europe and the rest of the world as guinea pigs for products that could very well have serious adverse effects.
Right. And you and I have talked about it. Remember, I found that older rat study done by Monsanto on their corn genetic engineering, and they found in two groups, one with a genetically modified event or genetically modified organism, that corn that was fed to those rats produced kidney problems, blood balance problems, especially the white cells and large kidneys in the males. They had a whole slew of changes, early death of fetuses. You'll remember the Russian Institute of Science study that only came out, 2 months ago. They actually felt the information, the data was so significant that they released it to the general public and the press before the paper was published. The paper is due to come out shortly, and that one was stunning in the numbers of birth defects, the early deaths of rat pups, and so on. And so this is more and more data is appearing that shows that these decisions to release this genetically modified food into human diets, animal diets, and so on was the wrong decision. We have let a genie out of the bottle here, unfortunately, and unfortunately it's hard to keep it in because these things often spread by pollen and seed as well and are grown worldwide and begin to contaminate the regular food source. But when scanning through these 360-some-odd pages today I could see the arguments between the scientists, but also the agreements among most of the scientists that without data, over time, and continuous surveillance and monitoring of these products after releasing them, that we don't have data that is any better than it was. I mean, we don't have data that is pertinent to risk assessment now, and that any decision that was made back, say, 10 years ago to release a certain product, that decision is no good anymore because now we have new data, new information, new scientific knowledge, new ways of assessing risk and so on, but it's too late. It's already out there. It has not been surveilled. It has not been monitored. We don't know the effects on kid A, adult B, and so on. We don't know the cause and effect between the dramatically increasing rate of anaphylactic responses, things that cause emergency allergy responses in emergency rooms, deaths, anaphylactic or asthmatic reactions after eating a particular food. We have no idea of knowing this. And so, unfortunately, these folks were very blunt in stating that this data just isn't available, it's not current, that they don't feel they can make an assessment on risk, and just because a private company has assured them that no risks have been found, which is what happens here in the United States. A company tells our FDA no risks have been found.
Okay. But then, of course, when they look at their figures, they were lying.
But oh, yes. Oh, we know that for one company, don't we? Based on the rat studies, because it wasn't based on sound science. You don't draw the conclusions that those scientists drew after looking at the rat studies. I think you'll recall that the statement that these scientists made that were employed by this company basically was that these defects that were found were insignificant because you would expect them in the general population of animals in this sample size. Well,
yeah, but
that
you,
was
only
the case,
you only found them in the animals that were eating the genetically modified food. You did
absolutely
not find them in the controls. That's
absolutely
the thing.
Absolutely. This isn't good science, Dan. I mean, no scientist in his or her right mind, if he was an honest person, she was an honest person, is going to draw that conclusion. Having a sample size that they say is statistically significant, that it's large enough in order to yield statistically significant results, and then stand and look at those data where only the ones eating genetically modified corn had the defects. And the Russian studies showed the same thing. Only the ones with genetic events in them, the ones that had been transformed with these genetic materials, those are the only ones that had the defects. They weren't like large populations of for example, a whole global population of humans. You'll expect to see so many cancers, so many common colds, so many cases of genetic defects and so on. We're not looking at a population anywhere near that size. We were looking, as I recall, we were looking at only 300 rats in that particular study, and they divided those guys up, and then the only ones who had defects were the ones that were on the genetically modified corn, and then to throw everybody completely off, they thought, they just drew the conclusion that, no, those events were not significant, because the general population would be expected to have thus and such a thing as a normal occurrence, and it was just baloney. And unfortunately, the agencies that we have appointed to look after our health, they unfortunately have not been acting in the interests of the people of the United States. Now, mind you, having said that, you've probably seen some of the public television programs on the scientist who was trying to warn the government about global warming changes and so on, and he was hushed and basically shut up, and he finally went public, and now other scientists who are quitting these agencies because they are not doing science anymore, their work is being rewritten and commented on and conclusions drawn by administration staff, not by scientists, in order to cover up the actual findings. Well, here we have an EU commission who has basically done a very honest job of assessing this entire GM problem, GMO food problem. And yet in 2004, the pressure was so great that they began to allow the release into Europe of insect-resistant GMO plants. And yet the outcry now is, how do we know even those are safe? For example, the BT corn is the one you and I talked about many months ago. And sure enough, this is one of the things that was mentioned.
Now, for our listeners out, the BT corn is the one that kills the caterpillar, doesn't it?
That's correct. Bacillus thuringiensis, right.
If the caterpillar eats any of the kernels of the corn, it kills the caterpillar.
Now, or even the leaf.
Right. It's because it's in every gene of the corn. But
right.
What does it do to human beings if it's going to kill the caterpillars? What does it do to us? And, well, what does it do to us?
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. These are, and I have used the word over and over again, the thing that I have been concerned about is the fact that you're creating, with the insertion of novel genes, often these genes have been constructed by man, by woman. These have been constructed and placed into a plant, and they produce novel proteins, novel to the human body. Well, don't you know, throughout this whole EU Commission report is the word novel. Novel events, novel products, novel proteins, and that is the thing that you have to be concerned about. How does the human body respond to a new protein it has never seen before? Well, if that protein is injected into the blood, for example, you could cause the death of a person. A person gets, an overdose of something that they have no protection against, and they can, in fact, go down because their immune system is set up to react to novel proteins on the outsides of bacteria, viruses, and so on. Well, what happens when we put novel proteins and novel genetic events inside a plant, and that plant we end up eating? The other thing to keep in mind is that when you do genetic engineering, you are not necessarily being specific. You know where you're cutting into the genome to put something in. You use chemical scissors to cut on both ends to make room for, and then you put the little piece in, this genetic sequence, and that is what puts it into the genome of the receiving organism. But you don't really have an idea how many times that insertion is occurring, if it is occurring multiply inside the genome of the recipient, or whether it is just being a single event. They tend to stack on top of each other sometimes, and we also don't know what the long-term effects are of this particular construct inside the genome. We also don't know what the event has, what effects it has further on down the DNA molecule, whether or not the production of this novel protein is impacting some other genetic function somewhere else. And I have suggested to you in the past that I am concerned that these kinds of unexpected events as a result of the insertion of these novel gene sequences, there may be unexpected events that, unfortunately, don't appear as the smoking gun. Because you cannot predict what that event is, where it might happen, or when, how can you relate it back to the cheeseburger you had with the white flour bun that happened to have a genetically modified sequence in it?
Well,
how can you relate it?
Of course, the thing is that we don't know. They can do animal studies. They said a genetically modified corn that hadn't been cleared for giving to human beings, so they fed it to pigs. And at least in one instance, a whole flock of pigs, male pigs, became infertile. In other words, they couldn't. We find within the human beings, more and more men have all sorts of erectile dysfunction. Couples can't get pregnant, and we have fertility clinics springing up all across America. What's the cause? Well, of course, there are no studies that show that these things are safe, but. Well, and the animal study shows that they're not, but we're going to give them anyway because there's no evidence, of course, that it is harmful. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti. What the American people don't understand is you out there in the listening audience are being used as a guinea pig. And they have no concern about you or your health. They've done this for years with all sorts of medicines that never should have been released. And so many of these medicines that are on the market are frankly harmful for you. And we talked about so many of the other things. But, you know, certainly with a genetically modified food, what they're doing is playing God. And what they're doing is interfering with God's plan, how various plants would be, you know, created and the genetic pattern. There's one thing, of course, when you're hybridizing plants and crossing pollens. It's another when you insert genes from a fish or a cancer gene, you know, use that as a carrier for something you're putting into, you know, into a food product that is going to be ingested by millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of people all around the world. And what's going to happen 20 years from now if we find out, oh, it was just a terrible mistake and hundreds of millions of people die? We don't know. So why are they experimenting on the people throughout the world, and why are they forcing Europe to open their markets to genetically modified foods?
Yeah, and actually... the bottom line there, for most people, thinking about this could easily be profit, 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 and who cares? It's always stunning to me when there are surveys done, where they ask people, if you could lie and you thought you'd get away with it, would you? They invariably, the majority answer yes. If they say, if you could steal $1 million and you thought you could get away with it, would you do it? And again, invariably, those studies come out, the majority of people say yes. Well, that tells me lots of things, and that is, if folks see a way in corporations to make millions, billions of dollars, and they can get away with it, will they do it? Well, those surveys certainly would seem to indicate that they would. And unfortunately, that's exactly what seems to have happened, because the agencies, and it's very interesting that it's always the agencies, the governmental agencies, the corporations, that seem to be working together, even in the European situation. And they're often foreign governments, such as Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United States, that are involved in pushing this issue, pushing them to accept. And it really is unconscionable. Is it because of profit? Perhaps so. Perhaps it's because of profit, and they can get away with it. And why can they get away with it? Because of what we just finished talking about, and that is, it is difficult to find the smoking gun. You have a child with allergic asthma. Every single thing the child then puts in his mouth after the fact, he triggers an asthmatic attack. And the child is fighting to live for the rest of his life because of this allergic asthma. Why is this increasing exponentially around the world? It is not only air pollution. It has to be the introduction of novel allergenic proteins, items, substances in the environment that are causing bodies to react this way. And unfortunately, we have so many of them out there that you can't find the smoking gun. You don't know which one is responsible.
Hold that thought right there, Jerry. We want to bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti, and she's simply saying, pointing out that a marked increase in the incidence of asthma here in the United States. It's said that as many as 1 in 6 American children has asthma. Certainly 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and it never used to be like this.
Right.
But all of these things are on the rise. Heart disease is on the rise. Diabetes is on the rise. Pathological obesity is on the rise. And the people in government say, oh, shucks, we have no idea why these things are happening. Well, maybe they do have an idea, and they don't want to admit that they are culpable in what's happening. What we need, Jerry was simply pointing out that so many times when they had surveys and asked people, if you could steal $1 million and Dutch get away with it, would you do it? And so many people said yes. What we need is people who fear God, who are answerable to a higher authority, course, we've outlawed God and prayer from our schools and public places. Should we be surprised if we end up with an immoral society? And what happens when you have immoral scientists who are more concerned with their profits and their prestige than they are with their principles?
Well, and the other thing, you know, I have worked in the sciences with scientists for some 35 years. And I have yet to meet someone who was not completely and thoroughly involved in their research, who believed in their research, who was intellectually involved and committed to doing good with their work. Now, unfortunately, you're in a situation in a lab where you're having to, the old publish or perish, you're having to publish your results, you're always in competition with a pocket or whole teams of scientists someplace else in the world, and your funding, which is the way you live, that's how you earn your money, your funding is dependent upon your results getting out there fast and so on, and being good, reliable, reproducible, and so on. In defense of the average scientist working in university laboratories and so on, research scientists, they are working for a living. Number two, they are so grossly involved and so laser-like focused on their work that often they are not looking outside and seeing the potential use of their narrow specialty in some grand corporate scheme somewhere. I can tell you the people that I have worked with have been hired by Monsanto and other large companies. Sugar manufacturers, for example, make sugar more resistant to herbicides so that they can spray yet more herbicides on the fields to get rid of weeds. And so you take somebody who had very noble research plans and ideas, who was then sucked up by industry to work on this problem with weeds in a way that's really going to negatively impact the purity of sugar. But people have to make livings, and they're not part of that grand scheme, but perhaps their corporate sponsors, their corporate employers are. And so not to knock all scientists, they aren't, labs aren't full of evil people, but there are people who will take bodies of knowledge that we develop as scientists and apply them to less than noble goals. For example, making massive amounts of money. I mean, how much is enough? How much do you need to live? Is a bottom line question I have often asked when looking at the way the world is run. Not to paint the picture that these are all mad scientists. We can do science and we could serve our fellow man and woman and child by doing science well. But unfortunately, what I have in my hands today and on my computer today is a 300-plus report that has gone into the hands now of Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth, who have now published it today on the internet. And in that report is by name the scientists and how they were objecting to the fact that you could not make decisions about the safety of a genetically modified food based on the data they have, based on the time that data was gathered, based upon lack of follow-through, follow-up, surveillance, monitoring, the fact that sometimes the only opinion rendered on a particular genetic modification of a food was given by a private corporation and a single person. And based on that, the governments wanted to force this food out into the public. And they have succeeded in the United States and in Australia and in New Zealand. They have succeeded in pushing those out despite the fact that people think they've been tested. They have not been tested. They have not been deemed safe by any scientific rigor at all.
And, of course, we know that certainly Monsanto has violated the public's trust in the past and other things. Why should we trust them now? The government, if they want to release it, they should do their own studies, not take Monsanto's studies or anybody else's studies. Who's looking out there for the people? And I'd like to suggest no one. Well, there's Dr. Stan, I guess it's Jerry Quintetti, and there are really so many stories out there. I know there's one story that Jerry would be well acquainted with. It was a story of an English scientist who was studying genetically modified potatoes, and I don't know what they did, but they modified the potatoes, and then, of course, to see if they were, safe for human beings, why they started out feeding them, and I think there was probably a laboratory of rats, as I remember, and, you know, the rats got sick and got all sorts of disease. I've forgotten, you probably remember better than I do, whether they got cancers or what, but the rats were dying from eating the potatoes. And but when the doctor, the scientist, a well-respected scientist, actually published these papers, he came under vicious attack. His career was destroyed. And why? Because he told the truth about the danger of a genetically modified potato. You remember that story, Jerry?
As a matter of fact, I don't recall what the disease was that brought the rats down, but in fact, the rats did die from eating these potatoes, and we've had so many cases since then of results such as these that are then buried. I can tell you that years ago, when applying for a position with an environmental company, I was asked on the application, would I be willing to change data in order to meet company goals? And I wrote, of course, an emphatic no. And, of course, I never got past the gatekeeper, having answered that question that way. There are companies whose bottom line is get a job, make the money, and, science be damned, the truth be damned, and that's that. So it does not surprise me that people have lost their jobs. When you do get hired by a company with a certain agenda, with certain application expectations and so on, product expectations and development and get things out, R&D has to get out into practice within, say, 4 or 5 years, you're a team player or you're out. You have to get this thing through. And unfortunately, many scientists get in thinking they're going to do really top research and really do the thing that they love doing, and then they find out what this is really all about, and they end up quitting. Turnover is pretty great. Now, if you're a young scientist in your 30s, and you've got a family full of kids at home, and they tell you, you play our way, or you're on your way, that person may have to make the decision to stay because, one, they don't have medical insurance, they don't have salary, they have a house, mortgage, kids.
Hold that thought right there. Sure. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jerry Quintetti, and we're talking about genetically modified food. And, of course, Jerry is the founder of the ARC Institute that offers heirloom seeds that are not genetically modified. And this has been her avocation for a number of years, feeling the importance of having not genetically modified seeds. And it's really difficult to get them because, if you're growing your seeds in one field, there may be a field just up the way, where they have the genetically modified food, and that pollen will come down and get into your seeds, and that's what you're selling, without even realizing that you may be selling, adulterated and even dangerous foods, dangerous seeds that will grow dangerous food. Jerry, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your website? Would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your 800 number?
Sure. The ARC, A-R-K, Institute is a botanical, Noah's Ark for seed, non-GMO, non-hybrid heirloom seeds. You can reach the ARC Institute via our website, arkinstitute.com, arkinstitute.com, or our phone number is 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. Just leave me your name, your phone number, your address, or your phone number to call you back that same day. And we'll call you back and let you know how you can get a hold of a collection of these non-hybrid, non-GMO seeds. And they are running out, Stan. They really are. I don't know how long we can keep them clean, to tell you the truth. This is getting crazy. We have pollen contamination all over the world now. And even in areas where people feel they are able to keep seed clean and are selling them as non-hybrids. In fact, these pollens are blowing in the wind, and increasingly people are finding genetic events in some of their heirloom seeds. And so it's important that you learn how to save seed and even to protect your seed from errant pollen that might contain some of this genetic modification. I think the restarting of the world after all of the madness that's ongoing right now is going to depend upon people who have collections of these kinds of seeds that can be saved from year to year. By the way, I do have good news. I hate always talking about bad news, and I have been talking to you and to your listeners now for months about an upcoming meeting in Brazil that's the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity. And I told you that the Terminator technology was slated to be one of the big agenda items that were being pushed by three countries, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, with the quiet support of the United States, trying to get the UN to abandon its de facto moratorium on the Terminator, the production of sterile seed that has the potential to starve people out around the world and to denude the earth. And nobody will say that as plain as that, but I'm going to say it. It has the potential to denude the earth of seeded plants because it's a generic seed technology that has the ability to blow into the wind and contaminate other plants, making it impossible for seeding plants to reproduce themselves. And so, you know, starvation is the obvious thing at the end of such a nightmare scenario.
So you could grow a great crop, but I mean, it just wouldn't produce any fruit.
The fruits that would be produced would be sterile. And so when the seed drops on the ground, it is no longer able to reproduce itself. And nature has been set up so that seeding plants make it around the world and keep the planet green. And unfortunately, we, in all of our infinite wisdom, the United States has authored the first Terminator gene in 1998 with Delta and Pineland Corporation. And now there are some 38 varieties of Terminators. We, the people of the United States, have authored with our tax money three of these Terminator patents. Well, the good news, I told you there was good news. It's official. This was a direct quote. Governments at the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity have unanimously upheld the international de facto moratorium on Terminator technology, plants that are genetically engineered to produce sterile seeds at harvest. The eighth meeting of the CBD ended today in Curitiba, Brazil. It has soundly rejected the efforts of Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, supported by the U.S. government and the biotechnology industry, to undermine the moratorium on suicide seeds. By consensus decision, all governments have reaffirmed the moratorium on genetic engineering technology that threatens the lives and livelihoods of 1.4 billion people who depend on farmer-saved seed. They are calling Terminator genocide seeds, and I know that's a dear subject to your heart, or at least you're very involved in reading about that, Stan, and I would have to agree. I wrote that first article in 1998. This is insanity. They're coming out more bluntly here and calling them genocide seeds, and in fact, I would have to agree with that gentleman, Francisca, or is that a female? Francisca Rodriguez from Via Campesina. She says, we have pride in being one more step forward in our struggle, but we will not stop until Terminator is banned from the face of the earth.
Well, of course, I think our listeners need to understand that the whole idea is that that means, of course, you're going to have to buy your seeds, from one of the big seed producers. You can no longer save your seeds because they won't germinate. So,
right.
I mean, this is truly a diabolical thing. But what happens if this gets into the, you know, in the air and it gets into pollen and it goes from field to field to field, and suddenly you are in a situation where you cannot grow products because they're all contaminated with the terminator gene. Mm-hmm. And when you have people who are playing God and they're doing it for a purpose of making a profit, that is the only reason at all for the terminator gene. Now, who actually made the terminator gene? Whose product is that?
It is the United States government. We worked in the U.S. Department, U.S. Department of Agriculture, working with Delta Pine Land Corporation, a cotton seed company, basically, to develop this generic, and by generic can go into any kind of seeding plants, technology to be able to produce sterile seed. It prevents people from stealing your research, if you will, your genetic engineering. It prevents them from taking your seed and growing it on their own. And they did this in 1998. I discovered and read the patent one day online, and it was called, very innocuously, Control of Plant Gene Expression. Now, that seems just so harmless, but when I read it, I said, wait a minute. What do you mean, controlling plant gene expression? And the more I read, my eyeballs got bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you go on the website, on the Arc Institute's website, look at 1998. I believe I wrote the article in June of 1998. You'll see Terminator is in the title. Read that article, because that is where it began. When I realized what this meant, I kind of put it in plain language, and that article was reproduced around the world in so many different languages and came back to me in journals and so on, in Portuguese and so on. And it was astounding to me that everybody got it, and they got it fast, how absolutely important it was to fight this thing. Well, the fight has been going on, and we have just won yet one more battle. Thankfully, we're not going to be able to, they're not going to be able to put it outside in field studies. It's in studies right here in the United States, but supposedly in greenhouses, so that it doesn't get out. But this moratorium, if they did their little shenanigan was to evaluate it on a case-by-case basis, which would then allow one or two or 10 or 100 trials to go out into the field around the world, and once out in the field, the genie once again is out of the bottle, and we've got this pollen spreading. You know, corn is related to grass, it's related to a primitive grass, and you know, wild carrot is related to domestic carrot, and so, you know, this beautiful Queen Anne's lace we see growing all around the world, perhaps that would be affected by a terminator in carrots, for example. And you can see where generally the world would begin to lose its capability of producing seeded plants, once again, for the sake of profit, control, and making everyone have to come to you for a particular seed. Greed is the bottom line. This has the potential to change whole ecologies.
It has the potential to kill millions of
and
people
still,
from famine.
Of course.
Well, let's go to, we have a caller on the line. Hi, Jeannie, did you have a question for our guest?
I did, Dr. Stan. You know, as a researcher, I was involved in a lot of environmental groups. And Jerry, I'm interested, you did inject that you were applying for a position in an environmental group?
Environmental company, yes, and that was
what
back
was
in New Jersey. It was back in New Jersey, and that was, oh my, 35 years ago, perhaps. When
what
I first completed, I don't know the name of the company anymore. It was a small company in New Jersey. It wasn't a large company. It was a smaller company, a startup. Don't forget, that's about the time those startups were, those companies were beginning.
Now, I'm a little bit,
I would never,
Jerry,
yes?
I'm a little bit confused when you say the United Nations, they had the meeting on the biological diversity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there was a consensus decision that they were against the terminator seed. And having gone to the international conferences and sat there and listened, who controls the United Nations? Isn't it the United States and Australia and New Zealand?
I'm not involved in the politics. I can tell you that this was the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity, the CBD, and they unanimously, the nations unanimously upheld.
Yeah, consensus is not voting, but a general consensus, a general feeling. And you had injected a little bit early in the program that you somehow believe in global warming. Is that true?
No, I did not say I believe in global warming. Now, if you are going to ask me my position on that,
what is your position, Jerry?
We can do a whole hour on it.
Jeannie, we're getting a little off the,
yeah,
the subject here. So let's just stay on the subject. Do you have another question for our guest?
No, you know, it's difficult sometimes to construct sentences when you're having a discussion, as we are, Stan, that doesn't trigger certain things in certain people, you know, who have beliefs. Now, global warming is a topic that we could cover for 10 weeks of time.
Right, of course, we're talking about genetic engineering
yes,
it.
Right.
And, of course, apparently this is a recent statement by this United Nations Committee.
Yes.
And they certainly are going to oppose that. And, of course, was the United States there? Did they try to influence the decision, you know?
Well, this is the whole U.N. This is the whole U.N. United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity. Now, that is a separate and distinct discussion from the one that we were having before, which is on the EU Commission admitting that there is GM food uncertainty in terms of risk and safety. I am giving you some good news in addition to that bad news that unfolded today, and that is that the UN itself has upheld the moratorium on Terminator seed technology. And that's a marvelous occurrence, and that I'll stand firmly on and say I personally have been fighting Terminators since 1998. Personally and professionally I've been fighting Terminator since 1998 because of its potential impact on poor peoples around the globe. 1.4 to 1.6 billion people around the earth absolutely depend for survival on a daily basis on the ability to keep and save their own seeds with the ability to reproduce those seeds from year to year themselves. And Terminator technology would take that freedom, yours and mine as well, the ability to grow our own food out of our hands and put it in the hands of corporations who then have control. And I think you and I have a job, all of us have a job who have any kind of, you know, soapbox on which to talk, to try to help those who don't have the ability to speak for themselves. And I am just thrilled to pieces that this has been upheld. That doesn't mean we've won this battle on Terminator. Certainly they're going to try and try and try again because the profit potential is absolutely incredible here.
And of course, I think that how it came about, I don't know, but if it did come about, it may be a temporary, certainly a victory, but the powerful forces on the other side, and many of them operating right here in the United States, will, by one means or another, try to get this forced on the rest of the world, as we are using tremendous pressure on Europe to try to get them to accept genetically modified food. Now, Europe has actually accepted genetically modified food.
Only the ones for disease-resistant genes they have, and they don't want the other genetic engineering. But unfortunately, that's just like putting their foot in the door. You know, these companies hope to put more and more and more in there. This report, which was just made public today, this 300-some-odd page report, is available on the internet. And when you read it, it is a really an honest piece of work. These people literally did sit for years and debate this issue. And you can see all their misgivings. I could read you quote upon quote upon quote of their misgivings about approving this these foods. For example, they're talking about erroneous science and poorly constructed experiments, and that many of these things weren't good science. And how could they do it? And what do you do when you have two experts, equally expert in their field, in disagreement about what a particular study showed? As long as you only have two experts dealing with this, how do you make a decision whether or not to release this food to the public? And, you know, it goes on and on. These are the kinds of things. I mean, there are some, for example, as noted by Dr. Andow and Dr. Squire, an absence of scientific evidence does not constitute evidence of an absence of risks. This is particularly important in the case of these novel products. When a relevant new scientific issue raised in the context of GM products, assessments has not even been studied or not studied with proper scientific methodologies. Even though science cannot be asked to prove an absence of risk or negative result, the novel character of products in dispute and the issues they raise justifies requests for more information.
Now, Jerry, let's get your telephone number and your website up one more time.
1-800-255-1912, and it's ARK, ARK Institute.com.
And if you'd like to learn more about the heirloom seeds that Jerry provides, and really for all sorts of vegetables and things that you really would want to have. Well, Jerry, let's go ahead and pick the story up from there. You have 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. Well, I would recommend to folks the newspaper, the international newspaper, where this article broke just today was The Guardian in the United Kingdom. So you can look it up, Guardian, April 18th, 2006. You might Google it and type in EU Commission and then GM Food, and it should bring it up. And inside that article, you will find a link to the 340-plus pages of the commission and their report and all of their interactions. And I would strongly suggest that you bring this to the attention of our own agencies here in the United States, our own government, the FDA, that is supposed to protect us. For example, you will find under surveillance and food safety, as regards food safety, even if some GM products have been found to be safe and approved on a large scale, the lack of general surveillance and consequently of any exposure data and assessment means there is no data whatsoever available on the consumption of these products. If you would take those kinds of quotes, quote them and send them to your officials and call your congressman, your senators, and talk to them and say you are very concerned. And we do have a revolving door between biotech companies and government positions, and that they're worried about paying for health care in the future, they're worried about boomers aging, and they're worried about the cost of medical care. Let's start attacking some of these problems at their root, which is how we eat here versus how others eat around the world. Why we're so unhealthy, why health problems are growing, why obesity is the epidemic that it is, a massive epidemic that's affecting every aspect of our culture. It's asthma, heart disease, diabetes, all of these related to diet, to exercise, to a feeling of wellness and lack of wellness. And we need to start looking for the smoking guns. I would suggest that people begin to buy organic foods, grow organic foods themselves, start eating very healthy. Watch how much better you feel, how much better you perform, and by all means, begin to speak out on the great big experiment that's going on right now.
We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much, Jerry. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Well, that was Jerry Quintetti, who does support Radio Liberty, and we appreciate her help as we bring the programs that you're not going to hear elsewhere. And you must understand that in addition to the motivation of profit, there really are evil and wicked people out there who want to do harm to our children. And you say, nobody would want to do that. Yes, I would point out that there are. The Nazis had all sorts of experiments that they used on children. The angel of death, Dr. Mengele, in the concentration camps in Germany, enjoyed experimenting on children. Actually, of course, he was allowed to escape to South America. If you haven't got our 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip, you need to get it. I've talked to at least 3 people here in the United States who had met Dr. Mengele as he was allowed to tour the United States. He was never punished for his terrible, terrible crimes. So you really need to get some of our 4-tape sets. We have a 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip where they actually brought many of the Nazi murderers to the United States and let them continue their work here and help the others escape to South America. About 10,000 of the Nazis were allowed to escape, and the only 2 who were ever caught were caught by Jewish groups, but never by our own CIA, which had worked hand in glove, of course, with the Nazis, helping them to escape punishment for their terrible sins. And then, of course, we would simply suggest our 4-tape set on genetically modified foods. We carry Jeffrey Smith's book entitled Seeds of Deception. It's excellent. We have another book on GMOs, Beware GMOs, by Greg Sciola. There's all sorts of information out there. And when you realize, of course, what they're doing, it really doesn't make any sense unless you understand there is an organized effort to limit the population of the world. And there really are people who want to get our population down to 2 billion, 1 billion, 500 million, or far less than that. And if you doubt that, you need to get our talk, and it has all the documentation in it. It's a talk I gave for the Prophecy Club. It's called Planned Population Reduction, and I promise you, you will never look at the world the same eyes again after you've seen that. And then, of course, I want you to get all the documentation we have. We have a little pamphlet called Genetically Modified Foods. You can go up on our website, pull down our information on vaccines and on fluoride. You need to understand that they put fluoride in the water to lower the fertility, because it lowers the intelligence, because it affects the endocrine system. It brings premature menarche in girls. It actually increases the incidence of heart disease and suppresses the thyroid. They know all of these things, and that's why they put it in the water. But they can't let you understand that Adolf Hitler used fluoridated water in the occupied areas during the Second World War. The Russians used fluoridated water in the Gulag to suppress the people. And we wonder why so many people in America today are unconcerned about what's happening. If you want to get pathological obesity, you feed the animals NutraSweet aspartame, which is in so many of our products in America today, and our diet drinks, and it produces neurological abnormalities. But you see, there are people who have a different agenda. They have a different worldview because they worship a different God. Why don't you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, check out our material. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.